All right, let's go down to the action again. The breakaway. He stole. There's the clean bottle. Now Dave's inside that clean bottle. He must spend his whole day in there, but he's invented it, and it is. I can tell you, it's selling like hotcakes, that clean bottle, because you can open it on the top and the bottom, so you can clean it out. If you want to know more about that, by the way, go to cleanbottle.com. I can't think why nobody's thought of that before. I really can't.
This is Amy, the senior group fitness instructor at the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. Are you looking for a spark of inspiration to bring to your next class? Find us at indoorcycleinstructor.com.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast. Thanks for listening. I'm John McGowan, your host, and at the conference this year, we were very grateful to have a water bottle sponsor, but it wasn't just some throwaway water bottle. It was something that's quite unique, and it's something that you probably were aware of if you watched the Tour de France this year. Now, Clean Bottle is an invention from inventor Dave Mayer, and Dave's joining me now. Dave, welcome to the Indoor Cycle Instructor Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. I honestly completely forgot the whole part about we need water bottles for our participants and threw out a plea for help, and you answered it. So, again, thank you very much. It was very helpful.
Sure.
It's very interesting. You know, when you watch the tour, we're going to talk about your very memorable mascot, Bottle Boy. But when you watch the tour, they're constantly throwing bottles like they're, you know, goo wrappers. And, you know, water bottles tend to be those things that, you know, that are just given away as, and yet it was very interesting that when we gave everybody their clean bottle at the conference, they held onto it like it was a prized possession.
Oh, that's great to hear.
Let's start from the beginning. Clean bottle is a very unique water bottle that you can open it completely from both ends with the purpose of washing it thoroughly. Where did that idea come from?
Well, I'm a really big cyclist. In college, I did triathlons. I've done a couple Ironmans and just always had problems cleaning out the bottom of my water bottle. And it's something where you leave some energy drink in there for a couple days. And then when you come back, it just looks like a petri dish and it's really moldy and gunky. And so that happened.
Isn't a petri dish by definition something that has a high sugar medium to facilitate mold growth?
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the bottom of the bottle kind of seemed like. And so I'd just get mad because I'd have to, even if I would try to clean it out, it wouldn't really get totally clean. In the back of your mind, you always have this thought that, oh, geez, there's some mold back there. And you're trying to be healthy and at the same time you're drinking mold. And so one day I was on a ride and it just hit me that if I could just unscrew the bottom of the bottle, then I could get in there and actually clean it out.
Yeah, and we're hearing it must be your young children in the back.
Yeah. So this is my home office. So clean bottle. Right,
Dave, tell us where are you located?
I'm in Portola Valley, California. So it's kind of near Stanford University. So between San Francisco and San Jose.
Oh, perfect! Wonderful place out there.
Wonderful. Yeah, a lot of great cycling and running and stuff like that. So
yes, living in Minnesota, I'm always envious of you folks in California. not the property costs that you have and those type of things.
Yeah, seriously.
But the weather and all the other things. Okay, so I know I have a lot of listeners who have some entrepreneurial bent to them. We've got a thriving new community of indoor cycling studio owners that have popped up over here the last couple of years. I've talked and actually had on my podcast multiple inventors of fitness-related products. And the thing I'm always most interested in is your story, okay? So you're riding, you have this idea, okay? Mm-hmm. If I could just unscrew the bottom, simple thing, right? Sort of thing. Okay, so what were your next steps that you took to really act on your idea?
I always had the bug to do my own thing, and I was a product manager at a technology company, and so I had a little bit of experience of bringing new products to market, but they're mostly just software things. I had no idea about how to manufacture physical goods. And so I called up a big bike manufacturer and I said, "Hey, I have this idea for a water bottle." And the bike manufacturer said, "Don't tell us. We'll just copy it." And
which they will.
Yeah.
Word to the wise.
So I said, "Well, what should I do?" And he said, "Well, there's other smaller companies that have made water bottles, and you should reach out to them." And so he gave me a couple names, and just turned out that two of the guys that he referred me to had just started a company doing industrial design, and I didn't even know what that was at the time. But it's basically people put together the packages that then are turned into molds for factories and stuff like that. And so I contacted those guys, and they lived, I don't know, 5 miles from my house. And so we went out for a bike ride, and I told them the idea, and then hired them to do the work. So that's kind of how it got started.
Were they partners of yours or just contractors?
Just contractors. So I paid them some money.
You kept control of your idea from that point.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So then did you develop, or did you feel compelled, I should probably the better way to ask it, to get some protection, patents, design, something like that?
Yeah. So I filed a provisional patent, which I just did myself, and that protects you for 1 year. And then when that was up, I filed a utility patent, and that if that passes, that's been in review for a couple of years now, and usually it takes a couple of years before the patent office actually gives you the first review, and then from there they'll have some questions, and you modify it, and then it'll go through if it's written well and there's no prior art.
Provisional patent. Explain to everybody what that is, contrasted with your utility patent.
Sure. I think it's. To the best of my understanding, it basically kind of holds your place. So it's something we basically talk about the description of the invention, what it does, all those kinds of things. And then it's only a couple $100 to file. And so it gives you basically a year until you need to file a more detailed patent that then gets submitted. So it kind of holds your place. And I think it's only opened or reviewed if there's a dispute as to who had the idea first. So it's a really, it's something that I recommend because it only costs a couple $100 and it's pretty low risk and low cost, and you don't need a lawyer to do it. And it's a way to just kind of protect your idea for a year while you develop it.
And during that year, you can kind of test to see if there's actually commercial value to your idea.
Right. Right.
And then, so how did you do that?
Well, it actually took me 3 years to get it developed. So the industrial designer came up with the design, I don't know, about 6 weeks, 2 months. So it was really quick. But then I had to figure out how to get it developed. And you know, most of these products these days are made in China. So I said, well, that's where I'll start. And I think there are no bottles with removable bottoms for a reason, because we had to switch factories 4 times. We had to go through 50-something prototypes to get something that didn't leak, that was really soft and flexible and functioned the way that I wanted it to. So that whole process took about, geez, almost 3 years to finally get that dialed in. So I ended up filing a utility patent in between then.
So you have an idea, and now you're starting to throw, I'm going to guess, some pretty serious money at it.
Yep.
Where did your confidence that you had a marketable product come from beyond that, after that, or during that whole process?
Yeah, I think it was just that I felt like I was the target market, and I'd talked to people about it and still tried to keep it confidential, but I had the provisional patent. But you never know what could happen. Someone could, if a big company decided to steal your idea, they could, and you'd have to spend $500,000 fighting them in court. But a lot of people that I met, they all said, "Hey, this is a great idea. This is something that I would buy," and so it just kind of gave me the encouragement that this is something worth doing. And also, I was still working full time as well. And while it was some money, it wasn't anything that was going to break the bank. So I felt like kind of the combination of getting the customer feedback, combined with the fact that there's pretty low risk in terms of me not having to leave my job or anything, it just kind of encouraged me to keep going.
Perfect. So you weren't burning the ships, like they say.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
You're going to commit your next 10 years of your life to make this work. Come
yeah, exactly.
You. All right. So you, and then you had the support of your family. Was there any active involvement from them?
The wife just encouraged me. I mean, there wasn't much that they could do just because it was in development and stuff like that. But then once we launched it, she went to a lot of trade shows and triathlons and cycling events for me. And, of course, you know, just supported me while I did a lot of the marketing.
Did you self-fund it then, or did you get investors at any point?
Yeah, it was all self-funded. It was really important for me to keep 100% equity, and that's what I still have. I just, you know, you hear a lot of these horror stories about you raise money and then it's at really bad valuation, and then you end up with 5% of your company and no control. And so it was important for me to pick a project or an invention that was small enough that I could realistically do it all on my savings.
Excellent. What mistakes did you make? It would be a value for someone to learn from.
Huh. I made a lot of mistakes. I just kind of assumed that the place that I needed to start this was China, just because that's where everything was made. Now I'm finding that you actually can make bottles in the United States for a pretty reasonable price. So I think I would have done a little bit more upfront research in terms of where it could be made, just because it's really hard to communicate with folks in China. I mean, for the first 6 months, they kept telling me that if you just made the bottle so the bottom didn't unscrew, it'd be a lot easier to make. You know?
You're missing the point here, people.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's just, and they just don't really understand the culture and kind of the need. Whereas in America, you know, a conversation that would take 2 hours could take 2 minutes. You could fly out to the factories, you can do this kind of evaluation. So I just made some assumptions that didn't turn out to be reasonable. And the folks that were there in China that helped me were great people. It was just that it just took a lot longer than I would have liked.
Are you currently manufacturing in the U.S.?
I'm manufacturing in China, but then we're also working with a factory in the United States as well. And hopefully pretty soon we'll be able to have the ability to do custom logos on the bottles.
Oh, hooray.
And so that's great, because I mean, I think that's going to expand our market by 2 or 3 times. That's just a huge market, the promotional products industry. So we're excited about that, but you need to have those made in America so you can really custom screen them really quickly.
So you've got a product now. You've through how many, what did you say, 50 design changes?
Yeah, I think I stopped counting, but I think it was about 54 different tweaks that we made.
Okay, so you had your product. Now you're going to invest more money to develop some inventory, while at the same time, you're going to start ramping up your marketing. How did you do that?
So I bought, I think I bought 5,000 bottles, and then we got them out to some friends and got some feedback and then made some tweaks, and then bought 20,000 bottles, and then they're all sitting in my garage. And I was like, okay, it's time to sell these now. So you know, just started reaching out to a lot of different magazines to try to get product reviews. And I think that's advertising. I mean, full page ad in Bicycling Magazine cost $60,000 for 1 month. So obviously I didn't have that, but if you can get people in Bicycling Magazine or other magazines to review your product, then that, I think that carries more weight than an ad. And then that's also free. And then I just, you know, no matter how good your product is, you know, nothing really sells itself. People have to know about it. And so I thought, well, how can I get everyone to know about my product? And I thought, well, a lot of cyclists watch the Tour de France, so why don't I dress up in a giant water bottle costume and run around in the Tour de France? And
and so was born Bottle Boy.
Exactly. Yeah. So,
well, it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. Exactly. Congratulations.
Thanks. So that we worked with the show Versus, where I bought some television ads and they were actually really reasonably priced. And so I was a partner with them. So no one really likes guerrilla marketing from that standpoint. So I decided, hey, let me partner with them, and went out to France, had a costume made and ran around every stage, and the announcers got really into it and mentioned me every day. And we went from, you know, our website just kept crashing. We sold tens of thousands of bottles just in that month of the Tour de France. So it was a pretty amazing thing. So it was cool.
To have Phil Liggett and Bob Rohl and company discussing your product like they did at the beginning of our episode here, it's got to be priceless. And but at the same time, I'm guessing it from a, you know, cost benefit analysis, it sounds like to me like it was well worth your effort.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's just, I don't know where we'd be without something like that. I mean, hopefully we'd still be doing well, but there's just something about having those guys behind your product and really kind of catching people in the moment when they're not really expecting to see an advertisement, so they're actually listening to it. And then also just, I think the way it was done, it wasn't in your face, and people wrote into me and just said, hey, every stage, we look forward to trying to find the bottle boy. And
yeah, you were the Where's Waldo of all of a sudden of the tour this year.
yeah, people really got a kick out of it. And you can get people to have emotional connection to your product, and it's less about, well, this costs X, but this costs Y, and analysis, and more of, hey, I think that's a cool thing. I want to get that.
Let's get into that a little bit. So you formed a partnership with Versus, who is the television sponsor of the tour. Did you have a schedule? I mean, did they know where you were going to show up?
Yeah, they kind of knew that I was going to be in the mountains. So, because that's where it's just best to run. You don't want to be running in a flat section. So they kind of knew I was going to be around there. And then when they saw me, I mean, the good thing about the tour is, you know, it's 4 hours long. There's a lot of, they're looking for things to talk about. And so I was one of those things.
Right. And so much of the tour are the antics of the participants in some respect.
Yeah. And that's a great thing about the tour is, I mean, you imagine being in the Super Bowl and being able to run along the running back as he's running. That just doesn't happen. So.
Oh, no. And some people obviously take it a little too far. And it defies explanation how those guys keep their focus, especially in those final stages before they get to the, you know, the gated area where they finish, especially the mountaintop finishes that those people write in their face. Oh, well, they do it. And yet that's what makes them the professionals that they are. All right. Okay. So you had your bottle boy designed. It looks like when I first saw you, I felt compelled to watch because I thought you were going to end up on your face. It's going to be a YouTube sensation. Bottle boy falling forward and then rolling down like a rolling pin to the other cyclist. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's the costume maker made the costume, but I mean, these things are designed inside for trade shows, and so they're not designed to be, I mean, I had to carry this thing 8 miles up the mountains every day, and so we ended up cutting some slots in the side so I could actually see, and there's a front vent that they had a screen on, but you couldn't see through the screen in the glare, so we had to cut that out. And I try to be really, really safe, so find a clear line. I tell people that I don't run beforehand, and if there's too many riders, I won't run. I mean, a lot of times you'll see in the videos I don't run just because there's you know, riders that are three or four abreast, because I want to be really safe, and this is their careers and livelihoods and stuff like that. So.
And you didn't want to end up on YouTube for the wrong reasons.
Right, for the wrong reasons. Yeah, exactly.
Did you have someone with you to help you carry everything, coordinate that whole when you were up there?
Yeah, I had a buddy of mine, and he's actually from China, and so he didn't realize it, but he needed a visa. So he was supposed to be out there the whole time, but he ended up not showing up until the last week. So I was kind of on my own for the first 2 weeks. So it was pretty interesting.
Well, congratulations. So where is your business now? It's not just you shipping stuff out of your garage, is it?
Well, I'm still shipping stuff out of my garage, but it's we have two employees, not including my dad, who works for free, and my grandpa, who works for free as well. My grandpa does the packaging. My dad does some of the shipping. My grandma cleans the costume. We have two employees.
So your family is infinitely or very well involved in this.
Yeah, exactly. So they realize that if they don't get involved, then I'll have to move into their house, and they don't want that. So,
so have you quit your day job?
Yeah, I quit the day job about, 7 months ago. So full time clean bottle.
Okay, well, let me ask you this question because I think a lot of people are going to be curious. Did you have revenue or income before you quit, or did you need to quit?
Yeah. So we had gotten into REI. We had gotten into, we're probably in about 800 stores. And then I said, hey, this is a viable business, and it's not something where it just wasn't fair to my employer to be working on clean bottle and working on their job. And so I felt like maybe I could have kept doing the job, but I just in my heart, I just didn't want to, you know, have a divided interest. And so I said, hey, now's the time to kind of take the plunge. And I live in Silicon Valley too, so pretty lucky. And I'm in the tech sector where, unlike the rest of the country, unemployment rates are pretty low here. And so I figured, you know, worst case scenario, I could go get another job if it didn't work out, but it would hurt Clean Bottle at this point and where we are. We're getting the traction that we're getting to try to multitask.
And I'm sitting here nodding because I know exactly of what you speak, because back in January of 11, I made a similar choice for the same reason. You know, you're divided. You're thinking about Clean Bottle. You're thinking about your day job. Soon you realize you're thinking about Clean Bottle all day long, I'm going to bet, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave, what other ideas to some budding entrepreneur would you have, you know, as far as, you know, what you've learned through your process?
A couple of things. I would just let them know how tough it is. I mean, people think that they have a product that is 5-10% better than the existing products out there, and just because it's a little bit better that everyone will buy it, and that's just not the case. If you have a product, and even if you invest all the money and get it to market and all these kinds of things, the store, the big chain stores, have to remove one of their products to put your product in. And that's a very hard sell. They also have to set you up in a vendor database and do all those things. And so buyers, just like everyone, they're kind of lazy. They're not going to do it unless they really know it's going to be a success. And why should they risk something on you, who has no marketing, has no brand, has any of that kind of stuff, for all these other brands that they're already carrying that are they know they're doing well? I mean, they could lose their job if it doesn't work out. And so, you know, I really think a product, if you're going to launch it in the consumer space and to get into big chain stores, it has to be, you know, 10 times better than anything else out there, not just 10% better.
Very unique is what I'm hearing.
Yeah, absolutely. And even then, a lot of people say, hey, we just don't stock one SKU product. So I think number one is just realize how tough it's going to be. And number two is it's less, you know, a lot of times the first product to market is the one that gets the mind share. So everyone can tell you who the first person in space was and the first president was, but not many people can tell you who the second person in space was or the second president was. It's just because, you know, if you're first to market, that's really good. And so in most industries, you won't be that. And so you really got to figure out, in addition to how do I get my product to market, how do I get my brand well known so that people are asking for it and so that these stores really have to carry you. And so that's one thing. I just got lucky with Bottle Boy and getting the word out. But that, I think, cycling is very unique. In a lot of industries, it's a lot more difficult to do something like that. So spend as much time as you're spending on getting your product to market, think about how you're going to get your brand some exposure.
And you use the word lucky, but I think I would probably say that it was a lot of diligence and creativity on your part.
Thanks. I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, the marketing is something that I really enjoy. And I think another piece of advice is figure out what you're good at and just try to find other people to do the rest, because there's such resistance to 99 out of 100 new products or ideas fail. And that's just because it's really hard. And so you really have to have A level execution on the manufacturing, on the marketing, on the sales, and every area. And so if you're trying to do it all by yourself, it's very unlikely that you'll be able to do an A job in each of those categories. So try to find people to the extent you can, or hire them that can make up in areas that you're not strong in, so you can focus on what you'd like to do.
Well said. Where are we going to see Bottle Boy next?
I'll be at the Tour of California next, I think it's May, and then hopefully back out to Tour de France. I think I'm going to have to bring my wife this year because we have two kids, as you probably have heard in the background, and it's hard for her to take care of them for a month by herself. So,
how old are they?
They are 1 and 3.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Yeah, thanks.
Making it even more difficult to launch something like this.
Yeah, yeah, but they're cute, and a lot of my Facebook posts are actually about them more than anything else, and I think it's all about having some kind of emotional connection with your consumers and your fans, and hopefully that kind of stuff builds up those connections.
If somebody wants to learn more about Clean Bottle or you, Dave Mayer, where should they go?
Yeah, just check out www.cleanbottle.com. That's CleanBottle.com. And I have a blog that talks a lot about these kinds of things, getting into chain stores and marketing your product and stuff like that. I don't know if it's useful, but it's definitely fun to read. So check that out if you get a chance.
Oh, it's fascinating. And it is to me. And I'm going to guess we're going to get a lot of comments from people saying, wow, this is really cool. And hopefully inspirational for
those. Thanks. Listening.
Very cool. All right. Well, Dave Mayer, the bottle boy, bottle. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, John. Appreciate it.
And thank you again for sponsoring our conference. I really
appreciate it. Oh, sure. Hope you enjoyed the bottles.
Well, in the background there, that walking bottle is the clean bottle guy. And I have to tell you that that bottle he advertises, he's invented. It unscrews at both ends so you can wash them and use them all again. Here's Alberto Contador, still riding alongside now, still looking good, gazing around, almost stargazing there as he sits on the side of the yellow jersey.